It is 7:03 p.m. You're tuned to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM. Welcome to another edition of Stark Raven. Stark Raven takes a closer look at prisons and the politics of criminalization. And we're here the first three Mondays of each month from 7 until 8 p.m. My name is Emily Aspinwall, and in the next hour, we're going to hear more about the upcoming Art Against Brutality event. We're also looking at post-9/11 border security later in the show, and more on Stephen Harper's recent plan to arm border guards. In today's news, we have news on Guantanamo Bay, CIA secret prisons, and Haiti's prisoners. And we're also going to hear from Mumia Abu-Jamal on 5 years after 9/11. We have music from Curtis Clearsky, Slater Kinney, and we have a live musical guest who's going to be performing at Art Against Brutality. So we'll have music from April Curry in the show. So stay tuned. We'll be here till 8 p.m. this evening. Art Against Brutality is a day-long multimedia community celebration of resistance. It's about the resilience of the spirit and the healing power of art. The second annual event is happening this Saturday, September 16th in Oppenheimer Park. Art Against Brutality is organized by an informal grassroots collective. Here with us in the studio is a member of that collective, Delana. Welcome to the show, Delana. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
So can you tell us a little bit about how Art Against Brutality came to be? I understand this is the second annual event. So how did it come to be last year?
Well, I don't know about second annual. It's the second time that it's happening, and we'll see how it takes off. Last year, it was quite an amazing success because nobody really knew what to expect. But the impetus and the reason that I had the idea to bring the community together in this way was it did stem from a personal encounter that I had, and as sophisticated as I thought that I was with dealing with the police, because I've been a pacifist and encountering the police at various protests and blockades, and I managed to stay out of their way because I'm fairly slight and I'm not one of the people that likes to boogie too close to that kind of power. It makes me pretty uneasy. But here this day, there was a woman that was, I had gotten off the bus, I was passing by a little demonstration, and there was a woman in handcuffs that was being virtually molested by some police officers. Her arms were being twisted. They were trying to force her to her knees and onto the ground, and she was resisting. And I just lost it. And there was a policewoman there, and she was saying, "Move on, move on. It's none of your business." And I said, "Well, damn straight, it is so my business." And so she didn't like the way that I was talking to her, and the conversation didn't get very far when I was plucked up into the air and shook like a rag doll by this policeman. I guess he's a policeman, and he had a uniform on, so he could pluck me up by the shoulder, shake me, and prepare to throw me to the ground. But I know a few maneuvers too from living down here for a while. Well, just from being alive for so long, from being a woman, you learn a few moves in self-defense. I landed on my feet, and I think I might have hit him in the boot as I came down. And he felt very threatened by this, I guess, so he called everyone in. And I'm a pacifist, so I end up on the ground, and it was pretty shocking for me to be on that end of it, because I've seen it happen. And it's always what you're afraid of. There you are, lying there. People are kicking you in the ribs and in the face, and women, too. There were a couple of women there. So they arrested me for assaulting a police officer and threw me in jail and held me there for a while and let me out in the middle of the night. Whereupon I made a bunch of new friends and found out about the Anti-Poverty Committee and the wonderful people that are working at DERA. They had a vigil out there waiting. There were three of us that had been arrested at that demonstration. And interesting, they let Lily go, the woman that was being beat up, because they had me, which was sort of like fresh beat. They had never been at me before. They had arrested Lily a few times. So anyways, I did put in a complaint, and of course the complaint is languishing somewhere. I'm not sure what they do with complaints, except for maybe tap your phone. And so I thought, well, yes, you know, I'm certainly no stranger to brutality, and the people in my neighborhood were constantly being brutalized, and not only by the police. So the police is definitely there, and the prison system, because I'm aware of how the prison system brutalizes people, and the prison system creates criminals. And so there'll be a focus on that.
So how did you get from sort of dealing with or healing from, recovering from that incident to organizing this event? What was your process for that?
Well, it's pretty traumatic. You know, I've been beat up before, but usually just by like one person, you know, at a time. Like long stretches of time, and I haven't been beat up a lot in my life, but I have encountered some of that. But to be beat up by a whole bunch of people and be lying on the ground and watching people young enough to be your kids kicking you, you know, and punching you and pinching you, and it's very traumatic, and the body, it takes a while to recover. And I could have gone into a serious depression. I could have gone into a master rage, and I think I did slip into that for a few days, and quite quickly. I mean, I'm a healer in my everyday life. I thought, you got to do something healing for yourself. So I wrote about it. But then instead of focusing on that, I moved to drawing it. And I drew some pictures, and I started, you know, dealing with it in that way. And then I thought, what about having an event? What about having a big event that draws together the whole community? Because I'm not the only one. And that helps to know when we're brutalized that we're not the only one, and that we don't have to be quiet and ashamed. I mean, in fact, it was quite embarrassing. I was strip searched, and my hair tie was cut off, and I was humiliated by these monstrous people. And so, sure, you know, here's a chance to shout that out and give other people a chance to shout out, hey, you know. And so it's about violence that's on a personal level like that, and also the violence of working on the street, and the violence of this system. So it's there's a focus on the systemic violence as well, the welfare system, and in fact the capitalist system in its sophisticated way, and the way that people are sidelined right from, you know, the time that you're stereotyped when, oh, you know, she's from a welfare family, let's not put her in the advanced class. Oh, well, we've got some room with the slow learners, you know, all the things that happen there. And, of course, the residential schools. We hope that there will be a strong Native contingent at this event.
And what was the response to last year's event?
Well, it was pretty overwhelming, considering that nobody knew what was meant, really, by this day. And so there were some people that caught it right away. Some people made their own displays, and some people brought one or two pieces of art. So that was great. We did have the labyrinth there and the paths of oppression. And so there's paths that you can, like a labyrinth that you can walk through, and there's art and words depicting and sculptures and things. And also there was community groups there, and they were kind of like Pivot was there, and they were right near the spiral of captivity, because they're dealing with captive minds and captive bodies.
And so it sounds like it's an event where people can come and participate, Can you tell people if they show up this Saturday, what can they expect, or what should they bring? Or,
well, the event can be experienced on so many different levels. The more you bring to the event, the more involved you are, the more you'll be surprised. You know, it's that way, because we're assembling, it's a community sculpture almost in assembling the labyrinth. And so we have an elder, Eunice, who is going to open with a dawn ceremony, and that'll be within the vicinity of 8 o'clock. Actually, it's starting to get late now. So we'll have a dawn ceremony with a blessing, and then assemble the medicine wheel, be somebody in charge of the medicine wheel, and the labyrinth, putting up the labyrinth. And so all morning, people can come and put up their art and help. We've got bamboo. We went to the Sunshine Coast and we trimmed about 60 pieces of bamboo. That was about all we could carry. We don't have a vehicle, actually, because we're sort of anti-car people, or pro-bike people, put it positively. But we didn't have our bicycles with us either, so here we were running onto the ferry with this huge bundle of bamboo. We're going to build the labyrinth out of bamboo and other things that we have found to support the structure. And so, excuse me. That's one way of getting involved there. Or you can just come whenever you want. The event is open to the public at noon, and of course, at the event there will be several tables and interactive art projects and games.
And there'll also be some performers.
Oh yes.
So one of those performers is Curtis Clearsky. And can you tell us a little bit about Curtis? Because we're going to play a song by him.
Well, Curtis, I met Curtis a few times and was just kind of in awe of the young man. And then at the World Urban Festival, he was given the ambassadorship by the UN, actually. In fact, the head of the UN, she presented him with this position, hip-hop ambassador of peace to the world. So that's quite something in recognition for the work. And I saw him the other day. There was a march that happened to commemorate another unfair harassment of cops, of two young women who were minding their own business, who ended up in a huge fracas that was really escalated by a poor handling on the part of the police. And this is too common. So there was a march down Commercial Drive to focus on this. And then there was a great stage, and First Lady was MC, and First Lady's going to be our MC as well. So, yeah, right on. And Curtis was there, and he just did one thing, but it was very precious. So he's articulate, spokesman, speaks right out. I think he got something lined up for us, don't
we? Yeah, this is called Relate to This, and this is off of the latest Redwire album, Our Voices Are Weapon and Our Bullets Are Truth. This is some Curtis Clearsky, and you can find him this Saturday at Art Against Brutality at Oppenheimer Park starting at noon. And we're going to come back and hear a live performance from April Curry, who's also going to be performing this Saturday. And tell you a little more few more details about Art Against Brutality. This is Stark Raven on Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Transformation, good as a bad as an adolescent bass wasn't hard to find. Rapping about life, love lost comes from my mind, body, and soul. After I'm dead, where's my spirit gonna go? I know someone gets them at the floor. Where the story go wrong? Inside an incident, I'm not convinced it's coincidence that we defy genocide. I celebrate and ride, but death is inevitable. We got memories that are unforgettable. Like a million masks we told from smallpox to crack rocks. We all struggle, so what you got? Are you a victim or a victor? Nothing can stop these dreams I'm trying to talk myself out of getting high. Temptations got me asking reasons why. Looking so lonely if you don't even know me, but I try. I fall, and if you find me on the ground high, pull me up before I die. I'm trying to talk myself out of getting high. Temptations got me asking reasons why. Looking so lonely if you don't even know me, but I try. I fall, and if you find me on the ground high, pull me up before I die. I've been hunted, haunted, headed to war. Drug deals look
for neighborhoods for economic reasons. Pimps doing the same and they're pleasing these cops. All these drugs, sex shops. It's no different than my chief and council getting bought and selling all the land too. We got nothing left but debt and disrespect from our elders, hand in hand like nose to the powder. Teenage kids are gonna die within the hour while our kids are scattered across the foster homes. Molestation and no one knows about the innocence that's stolen. Phony smiles and asks how it's going. Blood and tears flowing from these adolescent babies. Thinking maybe I should have been aborted, but really should have been rewarded for making this far. The trifling life of ours, these issues are viewed in the sense from afar. Forgotten when we drink and dance from these bars. All this pain bottled up and jarred. We can take it to the grave or express it and say enslave eternity of pain. These writings, confessions are blessings. Don't be oblivious to the questions you ask yourself. Too often put on shells, avoiding hell, but still we dwell. Stress on our problems. I tell my best friends, these paper and pens, the mightiest weapons of all, they make me knowledge dissolve. Eventually, negativity dissolve. Brick by brick, they fought my brother, the most of y'all. Let's overcome this tale, it's too tall. Scream, not whisper, but sighs, they just kiss you and make you blissfully blind. You find revolutionary propaganda's rhymes. Spiritual metaphors, fully silent words, and sliding up rise. I got this eye despised like an addict, realizing rock bottom. Forgive it, forgive us, don't forget the forgotten. Find your voice when you're talking the truth. It's hard to maintain with temptations.
I'm trying to stop myself out of getting high. Temptations got me asking reasons why. Looking so lonely if you don't even know me, but I try. I fall and if you find me on the ground high, pull me up before I die. Pull me up before I die. I'm trying to talk myself out of getting high. Temptations got me asking reasons why. Looking so lonely if you don't even know me, but I try. I fall and if you find me on the ground high, pull me up before I die.
Pull me up.
Trying to size the issues, saying we're too loud. There's an old woman choking back her tears cause she's too proud. But story's real, imagine the pain, imagine how it feels to not be acknowledged, validated. In the youth she hated every minute of residential school. The genocidal tactic tool could not do what it came to accomplish. Fuck Pocahontas and any treaty signed and turncoat that's amongst us. Growing up in poverty makes us so much stronger.
And that is some Curtis Clear Sky. That is Relate to This, and Curtis will be playing this weekend at the Art Against Brutality event. That's at Oppenheimer Park here in the downtown East Side, Saturday starting at noon, going until dusk. And with us in the studio, we have Delana, who's one of the organizers of Art Against Brutality. And we also have April Curry, who's going to be performing this Saturday. And Delana, do you want to tell us more about when and when April's performing? And
the event.
Oh, wait, let me turn your microphone on first. And then you can...
Okay, that'll
well, that
help.
Helps, yes.
Yeah, that always helps. That always helps. Okay. So, of course, the event will unfold as it will. It's a bit of an anarchic venture, but we do have three sets of music, and the Carnegie Irregulars are going to be taking the first set, and then we'll be hearing from some poets. There'll be a skit, let's see, I can never remember the
raise the rates,
but it's something about wrong, two rights don't make a wrong, or something like that. There's skit on the whole welfare situation that will be happening at around 2, and then there'll be another set that will be more kind of rock and roll, and I think April will be in that set, and I think Nasty Brutus and Short are going to make one of their rare exotic appearances, and we have a group called DNA that will be playing in that time slot. Things are, you know, the last week of the event, people still want in and we want to include them, and then there's people that all of a sudden find out that their cousin is getting married in New Zealand and they'd forgotten that they had a plane ticket. So I think something like that happened. We've lost one of our performers, but we've got the Rez Brothers, Johnny Rez, coming from Vernon for the third set. Curtis will be on at 5 p.m. And right now, we can hear something from April, who will be... Let's hear from her herself.
Hi, everybody. I guess I'll just play my song. I don't have much to say about myself. She left her house for a door wide open to look for more in a world now forgotten. Who is she and who has she been? So many men, yes, so many she has seen, but somewhere deep inside that little girl lies. she still tries to hide, but I can see it in her eyes. Some would say that she's too far gone, but she needs it today. Someone to hold her hand along the way. Lay it down, wind back to a shame to go back to it. Shamed and framed and free to go back. Told his parents he was gay when he was just 15. Told his parents he was gay when he was just 15. They told him God would never want him, that he was unclean. He left his home to escape the heat. You know there ain't no mercy here on Hastings Street. Mama hurt so bad, she never been so upset. Too damn late to forgive and forget. He was bursting with light that daddy just wouldn't see. And now he's got HIV, just like they told him life would be. Lay it down. He's too ashamed and framed and free to go back. Worked his damn life to come out at the top. He was big, he was the cream of the crop. And then one black day it all came crashing down. It was in the papers, it was all over town. Said what would he do and where would he go? Too good for real friends, he burned his bridges long ago. His $1,000 shoes look so cheap on cement. He slips them to the edge, it's something he couldn't prevent. No one is safe, no one is free.
Awesome.
Thanks.
Thank you, April. And that was April Curry. She's going to be performing the first set, did you say?
The second set.
The second set,
yeah.
Which is sort of the middle of the day. Two, three-ish?
Right.
Three-ish.
Yeah.
At the Art Against Brutality event. And again, that's this Saturday, Oppenheimer Park, noon till dusk. And everyone's welcome. Bring your creative healing energy and show up, participate. And I know, Delana, you also have something else you wanted to announce that's coming up this week.
Well, there are some more community events happening, thick and fast, and the Downtown Eastside Women's Center has a street party on the 17th. That's the Sunday right after Art Against Brutality, and it's from noon until 6, and they're going to have the usual good time that they offer there with the barbecue and their kind of hospitality. Also, coming up soon enough, on the 20th, from the 20th to the 23rd, is the annual Vision Quest. And the Vision Quest has been going on, I'm not sure which number this is, but it started quietly with some elders in Pigeon Park. Oh, in Victory Square. I seen them in Victory Square back in 2000, but it's grown, and now it's in Oppenheimer Park, and people are actually invited to come and fast, if they like, for peace in the neighborhood. It's a response to the homelessness and to the drug thing, and it's elders fasting, and if you don't feel up to the fast, you're welcome to come and sit for a while during those days.
And when is that?
That's September the 20th to the 23rd in Oppenheimer Park.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Delana and April, for coming down and joining us. I'm sure you're busy practicing and preparing for the weekend, and I appreciate you coming down. And if people want more information about Art Against Brutality, you can check the website artagainstbrutality.blogspot.com, or you can call 604-682-6222. 3269 extension 7400. That's 682-3269 extension 7400. We're going to go now to a little Oz 12, and we'll be back with the news here on Stark Raven. It's Co-op Radio 102.7 FM.
The truth, so sing loud, my people. Play loud, my people. Our voice is a weapon, and our bullet's the truth. So sing loud, my people. Play loud, my people. Our voice is a weapon, and our bullet's the truth. So sing loud, my people. Play loud, my people. Our voice is a weapon, and our bullet's the truth. So sing loud, my people. Play loud, my people. Voice is a weapon, our truth the bullets, but it's your choice, you choose the bullet, medicine or poison, abuse to full clips, magazines to websites, the youth control hits, the more the soul gets, the more we're protected, stand guard for children and elders, let them not be infected, we have been selected. To see a generation, to lead the survivors from flames of deception and obliteration. Our voice a weapon and our bullets the truth. So sing loud, my people, play loud, my people. Our voice is our weapon and our bullets the truth. So sing loud, my people, play loud, my people. Our voice is our weapon and our bullets the truth. So sing loud, my people, play loud, my people. Our voice is our weapon and our bullets the truth. So sing loud, my people, play loud, my people.
And it's now time for the news here on Stark Raven. Haiti continues to hold thousands of people who are being detained without charge. Presidential and parliamentary elections held earlier this year ended a turbulent period since the ousting of President Jean-Bertrand Aristide in 2004. The new president, René Préval, has used his time in office attempting to heal bitter political divisions in the country. But Amnesty International says that more than 2,000 people are still being held in detention in Haiti. They're being held without charge or while awaiting trial. This includes dozens of political prisoners. Four prominent political prisoners and supporters of former President Aristide were released from prison last month. They include Annette Auguste, Paul Raymond, Yvonne Antoine, and Georges Honor. The Lavalas activists spent more than 2 years in prison without charge. Former Haitian Prime Minister Yvonne Neptune was also recently released from jail after 2 years of incarceration. Haiti's prisons are overcrowded and the conditions are deplorable. George Bush has acknowledged the existence of a secret CIA prison network operating outside the United States. Media reports began surfacing a year ago that said the U.S. spy agency had been running a covert prison system. It was revealed that the secret prisons had been running for nearly 4 years in at least 8 countries, including Poland, Romania, Thailand, and Afghanistan. The reports sparked outcry in many countries, especially within the European Union. But it wasn't until last week that George Bush admitted to the existence of the secret prisons. According to the White House, around 1,000 people had been interrogated in these prisons. U.S. President Bush said that 14 people who they consider top terrorism suspects were sent from the secret detention sites to Guantanamo Bay. He also said that the secret prisons are currently empty, but would not be shut down. He insisted the detainees had been treated humanely, but declined to offer specifics on where they had been held. He also would not detail interrogation techniques used through the program. He called them alternative and said that they were tough but did not constitute torture. According to Amnesty International, repeated reports indicate these alternative techniques include waterboarding, or simulated drowning, as well as the cold cell, which is when detainees are left naked in a cold cell and repeatedly doused with cold water. European human rights groups are demanding more information about the role of Britain and other countries in so-called extraordinary rendition flights, allegedly used to ferry prisoners to and from the secret prisons. Amnesty International is calling for a full independent commission of inquiry into all the United States' war on terror detention and interrogation practices. And in related news, President Bush is pressing the U.S. Congress to work quickly to pass legislation to create military tribunals at Guantanamo. This is a requirement imposed by the U.S. Supreme Court when it struck down the tribunals in June. The court said the original military tribunals violated U.S. and international law. They also determined that Common Article 3 of the Geneva Conventions applies to detainees. Article 3 prohibits outrages upon personal dignity and humiliating and degrading treatment. Critics say that the newly proposed tribunals contain nearly all the objectionable features of the original ones. As part of the newly proposed tribunals, classified information would not be revealed to the accused. It also appears that information that may have been obtained under coercion will be considered acceptable evidence in these tribunals. As part of the package, Bush wants federal personnel who handle terrorist suspects protected from lawsuits or prosecution. Critics are also critical of the timing of this announcement. The U.S. congressional elections are on November 7th. By challenging Congress to focus on legislation about the treatment of terrorists, critics say Bush is hoping to divert the election discourse away from the damaging war in Iraq. If Bush can get the congressional go-ahead, military trials could get underway early next year. And more news from the U.S. war on terror. The Pentagon has released an updated interrogation manual. This is the first update since the Abu Ghraib prison scandal more than 2 years ago. It outlaws a number of degrading and dehumanizing practices and compels military interrogators to accord all prisoners' rights under the Geneva Conventions. It still allows interrogators to use good cop, bad cop methods, false flag questioning, in which interrogators portray themselves as someone else, as well as the physical separation of suspects. The new rules apply to the U.S. military, but do not apply to the CIA. And that's the end of the news here on Stark Raven. and that's some Slater Kinney off of their album The Woods, and that track was called Jumpers. You're listening to Co-op Radio CFRO 102.7 FM, and this is Stark Raven. It has been 5 years since September 11th, 2001. Through the manipulation of fear and insecurity, a culture of suspicion, control, and criminalization has been fostered since then. We have seen an increase in racial profiling and attack on civil rights and privacy. More specifically, there has been an increased backlash towards immigrants and refugees, particularly those of Muslim, Arab, and South Asian origin. As a part of this migration backlash, there has been a wide array of increased security measures at the border. Most recently, Stephen Harper committed more than $100 million towards arming border guards. With us to talk more about the issues surrounding this recent spending announcement is Harjap Grewal. Harjap works with the local immigrant and refugee rights group No One Is Illegal Vancouver. Thanks for joining us, Harjap.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Not too bad.
Can you start by telling us more details about Stephen Harper's recent announcement?
Well, the announcement was the idea had actually come about earlier this year, and was the proposal had come about through the Conservative government earlier this year as well. And what we've been told is that there's been a lot of lobbying that's been actually happening from the union, basically to have some sort of to be armed in order to have their security taken care of. But what the situation looks like now is that by the end of 2007, I believe they are going to be arming the border guards on all the crossings in Canada. And basically what it is that we've tried to highlight the fact that this policy announcement has been really narrowly looked at by not only the Conservative government, which we might expect, but also at a lot of the media and a lot of people that are covering the story.
Well, how will this policy impact people crossing the border?
Well, I think it's pretty. Basic with like a lot of things when we talk about arming, either public officials or anyone that has contact with the public, and we've talked about even previously the having the police on the SkyTrain. Racial profiling happens on the SkyTrain, and you create a situation where the people that are doing this profiling, this enforcement, people that are arresting people or detaining people, they are now armed, which creates obviously not only fear but a real danger for the people that are going to be experiencing any sort of enforcement by these authorities. And then on the border, we're obviously largely going to be looking at immigrant and refugee communities, people of color largely crossing the border. Will obviously be not only much more afraid, but would be put at much more risk of either being killed or obviously being taken by much more force or being experiencing much more enforcement at the border.
So the government and other people claim that this is about making our society safer and border guards safer. Mm-hmm. What's your response to that argument?
Well, yeah, that's actually been it's funny because the two lines that a lot of the media have been using is either making the border guard safer, but generally to sort of make it a larger issue, much like Stephen Harper does. The media has also been repeating that term that it makes society safer, and it's funny that people can actually say that when what you're doing when you're saying that this makes society safer is basically ignoring the people of color in the society. So you're saying that, yes, these border guards are going to feel much more secure because they have guns on themselves, but other members of society, like whether they be Canadian citizens or not Canadian citizens, if they look a certain way, are obviously much, much less safer than they were with the border guards being unarmed. So it's an interesting look at how people and the media are representing society, and it actually leads into sort of what... sort of the security climate in not only the U.S. but in Canada has become. It's become basically the safety of certain people, and although it's never clearly said that, looking at the policies, looking at what's happening to people from immigrant and refugee backgrounds in North America, it's very clear that the safety of those communities is necessarily not a priority.
And how do you see this arming of the border guards and other recent actions of the conservative government connected with U.S. policies?
Well, there's the prosperity agreement that was signed between the three countries, Mexico, Canada, and the U.S. Just earlier this year. And what it is basically, the policies are more and more integrated, and it's not actually a surprise because the arming of the border guards is definitely not the first step towards that. Soon after 9/11, there was this initiative created, which was the Smart Border Declaration, which was essentially integrating information, making the border more militarized, yet having it open to trade. It's a very clear indication of what the objectives of both of the governments are. And with regards to the U.S., obviously with the conservative government, which is using the language of the U.S. not only domestically, but with their own war initiatives in Afghanistan, it's not a surprise that the hysteria that you create, or the construction of the enemy in Afghanistan that you're creating, is very much more easily used here at home. And in that way, I think what's happening is that the policies of the two countries are much more aligned with each other, and obviously working together on many fronts around immigration. And I think the arming of the border guards is just one small initiative in that regard. The Safe Third Country Agreement, for example, is something that is an agreement between the U.S. and Canada where refugees can't make claims in the second country if they've passed through one of the countries previously. So, again, it's this we refer to creating Fortress North America, not only by militarizing their border, but having policy that basically limits people from actually finding a safer or better place for themselves to live.
And you mentioned this a little bit with the war in Afghanistan, but how do you see these policies, these border policies, in connection with the context of Canada and the war on terror in the larger picture?
It's one and the same, and I think we've seen this, obviously in the U.S. after 9/11, but also if we look historically at, the Japanese internment, when there is this enemy abroad, you not only are justified in creating this hysteria and the security culture at home, but it also supports your imperialist or whatever, colonial ventures abroad, right? So it's very much connected. The idea that you have a population living in fear in Canada because there's these people here that we need to be afraid of very much plays into the idea that, well, we should also be, following up with, where these people are coming from and, trying to change the society there, because there's something inherently wrong with anyone from, the Middle East, for example, that they come up in a certain culture where they can't, take care of their own, national or, domestic problems themselves. So, a lot of people talk about it. It's sort of coming back to, if it hasn't already, white man's burden again, where, you not only have to protect yourself, but you have to civilize the people that are a threat to you.
So where do you think we should be focusing our energies on? I mean, that's kind of a large question, but in the context of some of these, the larger pictures, what kind of things is No One Illegal advocating for or working on?
Well, I think it's difficult to say to be working on one thing. We're actually, we do work a lot directly with a lot of basically refugee claimants, which is some of our work. But I think some of the main things is that it's usually in a way on two fronts. One is simply for the people that are here that aren't getting status for a variety of reasons, is calling for some sort of regularization, which I think even in the context of the security culture is quite a daunting task, because one of the major arguments against any sort of amnesty or regularization for non-status people in Canada is that, well, there must be all these security threats. And the second thing is actually looking at, what these policies are. Again, there were campaigns and movements in the 90s when NAFTA came around about looking at what these policies, these economic policies, actually mean in terms of the Canadian-U.S. relationship and the relationship throughout North America. And these policies that are, being implemented right now, with regards to border security, et cetera, are basically in a way an extension of that, because in order to make, in some ways, to maintain this level of economic sort of apartheid, you have to also have not only the economics in place, but you have to have the militarization of the borders and, you know, the guarding of the fence or the state that has to happen as well. So in terms of looking at the work that we need to do and, you know, things that we are working on is to sort of look at, you know, this broader, not only like apartheid system that's being created in Canada, but also to look at exactly what these policies on the borders are and show them in the context of, you know, Canada's interests, you know, as not only like at a domestic level, but internationally.
Well, thanks very much for joining us this evening, Harjap.
Oh, no problem.
Harjap Graywal is a local activist who works with the local immigrant and refugee rights group No One Is Illegal. For more information on No One Is Illegal, you can go to their website. It's noii-van.resist.ca. We're going to go now and hear a commentary about 9/11 from Mumia Abu-Jamal. He's an award-winning journalist who chronicles the human condition, and he's been a resident on Pennsylvania's death row for more than 20 years, almost 25 years, and he writes from his solitary confinement cell, and his audio essays are produced by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio. His 1982 murder trial and subsequent conviction have been the subject of great debate. This is Stark Raven on Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM, and here is Mumia Abu-Jamal's latest commentary.
5 years later, feel safer yet? It has been 5 years since the disaster of September 11th, and the question that must not only be posed but answered looms large before us. Do you feel safer yet? Some may quibble about the short length of time. Yo, Mo, it's only been 5 years. What do you expect so soon? Others will look at the direction that the U.S. has taken in the last 5 years, try to peer into the ominous future, and despair, for wrong roads can only lead to wrong destinations. As the smoke was still rising from the rubble of the hole in the ground in Manhattan, President George W. Bush would go before the Congress and, lifted on a cloud of evanescent political applause, announce his intention, saying, apparently with an aside to the military, "The hour is coming when America will act and you will make us proud." 2 years later, he would make another announcement, this time described by writer Michael Peretti in his book Super Patriotism. On June 27, 2003, President Bush announced, "God told me to strike at Al-Qaeda, and I struck them. And then he instructed me to strike at Saddam, which I did. And now I am determined to solve the problem in the Middle East." God told me. He instructed me. Does it become a cause for concern that the U.S. president, sounding like an Old Testament prophet, is justifying his war policy by claiming to be in direct communication with the Almighty? The images arising from the ravaged Middle East may make you think of many things, but I doubt God is one of them. The U.S. Revolution made its mark in the world by forcefully rejecting the notion of divine right of kings. It had resonance in Europe precisely because it was an anti-royal war which sought to elevate reason as the highest authority in the state. Now we're back to the divine right of presidents. Iraq, by any measure, has been an unmitigated disaster. Voices from the right now admit this as they hawk books promoting the splitting of Iraq into three separate states or predict unbridled civil war. Meanwhile, if Iraq was fought to protect the homeland, a lie at any rate, it has served as a live training ground for insurgency, with graduation being the successful slaying of U.S. soldiers. Iraq, prior to September 11, 2001, was many things, but a terrorist training camp it wasn't. It is now, and it is tying both the Americans and their Iraqi puppets into knots. The question remains, do you feel safer yet? Wrong roads lead to wrong ends, and the Iraq adventure, driven less by faith than by greed and imperial arrogance, has led to repetitive disasters. America may indeed remake the world, but it won't be a world that it finds to its liking. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan for Prison Radio.
You're listening to Stark Raven on Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM. And we're just about out of time on today's show. Just have a couple of announcements for you. One is that the Amnesty International Film Festival is happening November 2nd to 5th, 2006 at Pacific Cinematheque in Vancouver. So write that down on your calendar or check their website, amnesty.bc.ca/filmfest. There's an event called Mexican No Independence Day Party happening Friday, September 15th, this Friday at 7 p.m. at the new Rhizome Cafe. That's East Broadway near Kingsway. And it's basically some community members talking about the issues around fraud in the recent presidential election in Mexico. There's going to be a panel discussion, videos, photo exhibition, and food. So check it out this Friday. Tickets are $10, underemployed $5, and it's a benefit for Co-op Radio 102.7 FM. And the Toronto Prisoners Justice Action Committee invites you to submit your film or video for possible screening in the third annual Prisoners Justice Film Festival. The film festival happens February 8th through 11th of 2007, and it shows fiction and documentary features as well as shorts. And so the deadline for submissions is October 13th, so that's coming up next month. If you want full submission details, you can find them at www.prisonjustice.ca. And there is a request for submissions for Open Minds Publications is seeking voluntary submissions for an anthology of poetry prose using the creative expressions of residents of local and national correctional facilities. So they're looking for poetry prose, artwork, fiction, nonfiction. So they're looking for brief submissions. If you want to send them a submission, you can send it to Box 166, 640-26310 Fraser Highway in Alder Grove, BC, V4W2Z7. That's Box 166, and it's 26310 Fraser Highway, and it's 640-26310 Fraser Highway, and the postal code again is VW42Z7. If you want to contact someone, you can contact laura_openminds@yahoo.ca. So that's it for today's show. If you're interested in keeping in touch with Stark Raven, you can join our email list. We send out to regular emails with information about upcoming shows, along with a digest of our recent news and links to audio. So you can email us at stark-raven@cooperadio.org. And just a reminder, Co-op Radio is a volunteer-run radio station. We rely on the support from you, the listener, to keep us on the air. So consider becoming a member of this community-based radio station. To find out more how to do that, you can give us a call after the show in a couple minutes at 604-684-7561. Next week on Stark Raven, we're going to have a special presentation on the 35th anniversary of the Attica Rebellion. And coming up next is Think Indian, followed by Pajvak and Blues in the Dark. So stay tuned to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM. We're going to go off with some more Slater Kinney, and this is the track Nightlight off of the Woods album. See you next week. Stay tuned for Think Indian coming up next.